It's the My Michelle Live Podcast.
Looking for the God story and news of the day. My Michelle Live, news and views. Here's Michelle.
Hey, well, it's a very important topic that we're taking on today. Nearly 2 weeks of fighting between Israel and the Hamas militant group in Gaza has been going on. If you haven't heard about it or heard a lot about it, well, that's because we care more about what pop culture is doing and in America. But believe me, this is big. You see on the streets rocking this tiny nation, the perils of war. It's a densely packed urban area, the Gaza Strip. It's about the size of Washington, D.C., with three times as many people. And Hamas and other militant groups are maneuvering among and even sometimes underneath the civilian population. Now, Israel says it's trying to avoid civilian casualties. Can you imagine how hard that is, though, if there's tunneling underneath the city? I mean, seriously, there are places where they have tunneled even to infiltrate into areas of non-Gaza Strip cities. Israel's trying to avoid, apparently, some of these civilian casualties, targeting fighters, their infrastructures, factories, arms factories. Hamas and Gaza residents say Israel is targeting civilian homes and health and educational institutions, often without warning. It's difficult. How is it affecting the nation? What does it really look like there? We know that about a third of the workers were absent from work in southern Israel, and Israeli businesses have lost $368 million since the fighting has started. We are not just going to talk about it. We're going to give you some insight with a view from Jerusalem.
And now, a view from Jerusalem with Rabbi Adlerstein.
Rabbi Yitzhak Adlerstein joins us from Israel, a view from Jerusalem. So we're going to get a little inside look into what's really happening, how it's affecting everyday people. But also, guess what, Rabbi? It's affecting us here with a lot of ugliness that we'll get to in just a moment. First of all, welcome. It's so good to see you and to have you with us talking about this important news story.
It's indeed great to be here. Survived the war, which was a little easier in Jerusalem than other places. We only had one rocket attack. But I can't tell you how saddened I am to have come out of the bomb shelter and face the world that I saw after the ceasefire.
Yeah, that is part of the big story.
Change for everyone.
Yeah, it's part of the big story. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you if you could set the stage for many of our listeners across the United States in particular that just knows, oh yeah, there's some violence in the Middle East. That's the extent of what they know of what's going on. If you could set the stage of what is really happening there. So we can build on that.
The shortest version is that Hamas started sending rockets into Israel. We don't have enough time to talk about why they did it and what they hope to gain, but they sent not one or two rockets into Israel, which no Western country that we know of or any other country would have tolerated. These rockets were 100% aimed at civilian targets. They were not aimed at military targets. They were aimed to kill and maim as many civilians as they could. And they didn't send in one or two. They sent in 4,300. They are produced in factories to a large extent that are below ground. It was called the Hamas Metro. We're talking about scores of miles, talking about things larger than New York City subway system, which was dug and paid for by all the money that the United States has been sending, that European Union has been sending, that has not gone to build schools and hospitals and housing in Gaza. And they've then fired them from the rooftops or between buildings, which was not a necessity of the crowdedness of Gaza, because Washington, D.C. also has open areas. And guess what? So does Gaza. They could have fired their rockets from the open areas between cities. And there are multiple cities in Gaza, but they chose to use their own citizens as human shields. And what that means is that they're saying, and this will be a precedent in other places of the world, including the United States, that if a terrorist organization can lodge itself among civilians, any kind of retaliation against them will be considered an act of war, a war crime.
Yeah, and that's where we have to take it truly at heart. We're seeing that there are many groups that are contributing to that mindset. You all had sent to me an article and some statements of how different groups are taking solidarity with the Palestinians and playing into this. Yeah, use people as human shields and you'll get the good press that you want. The entire law school of the University of Illinois at Urbana was involved with this. The Muslim Law Students Association, endorsed by the Asian Law Students Association, Black Law Students Association, Immigration Law Society, Latino Law Student Association, National Lawyers Guild, Public Interest Law Foundation, all of these and even more have come out saying, yeah, and really being in support of the very mindset that you are articulating right now.
And just don't fail to observe that there was only one other student organization that signed in to the Jewish students' response.
Thank you. And this is the God story. Now, boom.
Yeah, the Jewish students were not told that this was even a topic of discussion, and they did it on Saturday so the Jewish students wouldn't participate. And then the Jews found out about it, and then they issued their own version of the facts. And the only ones who signed on were the Christian law students.
Thank you very much. And that goes to the God story, looking at the deeper story beyond politics, beyond your fever, and trying to look at something that's right, to look at truth, to bring balance. God doesn't care what side of a border you live on. His law is the law. His character is his character. And that's why I believe that you saw this with the GLSA response and the Christian Law Students Association response, because it's a God story. This is not just indicative, though, of the law students. We're seeing a lot of leaders here in the United States, for example. AOC gave a depiction of Israel as an anti-apartheid state that indiscriminately bombed its targets, and that they're— this is crazy. This is while anti-Zionist gangs are beating up Jews in her own city. She's speaking to this, and she's not the only one. This was quite disturbing, these statements from these differing groups.
And they quickly bore fruit, primarily to Jews, but soon to be followed by everybody else, meaning that really, for the first time since World War II, Jews were being attacked in the streets and continue to be today in major cities and not so major cities around in the United States, certainly in London and other places. But let's look at the American side, where Jews dining in a restaurant in LA were set upon by Palestinians. We don't know if they're Palestinians, but they got out of two cars with Palestinian flags, who then went over to the diners and said, "Who's Jewish?" And two people answered in the affirmative, and they were then beaten by these people who emerged from the car. The people who are being attacked in the streets and called baby killers, as if because they look Jewish, they are now responsible for the inaccurate picture that other people have. But essentially, it's open season on Jews, not on Zionists, like they used to say. We don't hate Jews. We hate Zionists. Jews are okay.
I want to play.
That myth is over.
I want to play a video of one attack that took place in New York. You're going to see a man on the ground surrounded by cars, and he is being beaten. The only person coming to his aid is a brave man in a pink shirt trying to shield him. Good for him. You won't be able to see it, Rabbi, but here we go.
I mean, they were using their fists. They were kicking me.
We'll start at the beginning here.
A 9-year-old Jewish man. His name is Joseph Borgen, and he was senselessly beaten during last night's event. He has just been released from the hospital, and Fox 5's Robert Moses was the very first to speak to him just a short time ago.
I mean, they were using their fists. They were kicking me, punching me, kicking me all over my body. I mean, I got bruises on my rib, my back, all over. I know. I mean, my wrist is killing me. I was just guarding my head, my wrist sprained or something. I don't know. I got a slight concussion. I saw a video after. Some guys were using, you know, wood poles looking at the end of the flag, some crutches, et cetera, things like that. But I couldn't, honestly, I was really just like cowering and trying to, you know, make sure I, you know, brace for it and survive, to be honest. Yeah, yesterday was just, like the hate in these people's eyes. I don't say these people, the hate in the people who attacked me in their eyes was just amazing to me. And
wow, the hate in their eyes. We were talking about the God story. I would say that's just about the opposite. It is so severe what is happening in our nation. The anti-Semitism, it's been going on in Europe for some time as well. I don't quite understand this, but it is on an epic level.
Well, I don't know what you don't understand, Michelle. all of this could have been predicted. There's a plague in this country. It's not a question of some people who see it the way we do, and the way people who are connected to the Bible do, and other people have a different moral argument. What has happened in America, unfortunately, and certainly in Europe, is that the two sides are not United States and Israel against others. It's not one group or one religion against another. It's those people who have room to see moral arguments against people who have no room for moral arguments. Moral arguments have been replaced, have been supplanted by ideology. And the ideology is the scary thing. This ideology now has permeated the airwaves, conventional media, it certainly has pervaded the campus for probably 20 years, which means that people who do not have God need something in there. They used to feel with other people who had grievances that we sympathize with you, but nobody gave it an ideological basis until they got to campus, where they heard professor after professor essentially tell a Marxist story about class struggle. Only it wasn't the class struggle of Marx in Russia, the workers against the capitalists. The new two classes who are engaged in battle are those people who have power and oppress versus everybody with a grievance who is part of the intersectional aggrieved parties of the world who have to undo the power system. We don't look at individual casualties. We look to undo the whole system of power.
And
people
think
have been using so long that even people who are heads of major American companies have somehow assimilated this. And now in this woke world, are pushing this godless ideology, but ideology gives you conviction. messy things like deciding who might be right or wrong. There's a video I could share with you. Like an interesting character by name of Amy Horowitz, who's taken the last couple of years to stand on campus and ask, and other places, and ask people interesting questions. Like one of the questions he asked when the Georgia bill came up, and people were saying, well, if you're excluding Black people because Black people don't have computers and they don't know how to find the DMV. So he stood in Harlem and he asked random Black people, you know what a DMV is? Are you crazy, man? I go there all the time. You have a computer? Of course I have a computer. You know anybody who doesn't have a computer? No. You know how to use a computer? And everybody looked at him like it was crazy. He was glad that he wasn't attacked. So, you know, it just broke this myth. So last week he stood in an Oregon campus, Portland State, and he collected money for Hamas. And as students walked by, he said, you know, you're probably BDS and you support that. Well, we're BDS on steroids. We want to change the system. And, you know, we like killing people, you know, going after the soft targets, you know, people sitting in restaurants and gathered at weddings and things like that. You know, sometimes in order to change the system, you have to do things like that. So, you know, we're hoping that you'll look at us approvingly. And yeah, sure, man, that's cool. Yeah, fine. So you think these are just clueless kids on campus? But he asked them for money. And trying to get kids on campus to part with money, they were giving, sure. Will 15 be enough? 30? Yeah, I'll give you 17, I'll give you 20. So they were paying him as a representative of Hamas to kill civilians in Israel. Now, what's going on there? This isn't just a bunch of uninformed students. These have to be people to whom a message has been drilled in. And I know some of your listeners are not going to believe it. I have a hard time believing it. But this is what's going on in America now. And I hate to say it, Michelle, there's only one force in the world that can stop this. And that is God, particularly Scripture. Because some of these kids grew up in churches, but they're not reading the Bible anymore.
No. And that's where we're at today, Rabbi, in this divided states of America and in this divided world. The hate is at epic level. We have been programmed to feel as though we're victimized. And as you're listening, think about this, where you fit in with the victimization mentality, this group think of, I'm part of this. I'm part of the victim, the 99, the 1%. I'm part of the 99. I'm in the group. I'm in the majority. It is a way to manipulate you and to, instead of empower you, victimize you, but we're not paying attention. Those very college students who should be learning history aren't. We have a video of John, I'm sorry, I have to remember his name. John Voight, I believe. Yes, John Voight, making a comment on this. You may know him, actor John Voight. Do you mind if I play that, Rabbi?
No problem. I found as a friend.
How do I approach this matter? How can we see the truth? What's wrong with everyone? Can't you see this horror? A horror attacking Jews. I'm sick and tired of you followers. You liberal non-thinkers who only follow and bash and don't see what the truths are. The Jews have been attacked for centuries. Hitler took down millions of innocent Jews and babies and put them in gas chambers. What is wrong with you all? How dare you attack the righteous souls of God's highest truths in our own streets in Beverly Hills? What are you? You liberal fools. That's right, fools. What have you been taught to do? Ruin lives, steal, distort the idea of freedom? Freedom is the American dream. The Jewish man was taught to love, honor, and respect the morals of the Ten Commandments. What are you liberals teaching? Taking down Israel? You claim to be good. You're a disgrace to this planet Earth. We as a nation will stand with Israel, and we will not allow your barbaric words of injustice to destroy God's land, his holy land where Jesus crossed over. We and God will take down anyone who will destroy any innocent soul. The power of God. You anti-Semitic fools will pay the price when God intervenes, because no man will destroy God's land, Israel, the holy land of miracles and prayer. God bless.
That was impassioned, and I wanted to play that. You know, I'm not going to pretend that everything that that Israel does in this conflict is absolutely perfect and they are without sin. We know that none of us are without sin, and you know, war brings ugliness, but we are not hearing the full truth. And I'm going to caution you as you're listening today to consider this. That kind of hate, that kind of liberalism is a mental disorder. That is a mental disorder where you will be willing to pay out money so that innocent people die. That's a mental disorder where you have to hate somebody because of their ideology. That is a mental disorder. Check yourself, regardless of what side of an issue you're on. If you engage in that level of hatred, right or left, Jew or Gentile, liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, that is a mental disorder. Wow, what an impassioned speech he gave, Rabbi.
Right. And those are wise words, Michelle. Not everything Israel does is 100%, and the people who know it best are those who live here, and the people who debate it and question the government right and left every day. But still, Israel is a country where the head of Hamas, his daughter has been in an Israeli hospital for the last month receiving treatment. As her father is conducting warfare against the Jewish state in an attempt to kill as many civilians as possible, his daughter was brought to an Israeli hospital where she is at this moment still receiving treatment in Tel Aviv at Ichalot. Now that says something.
It does. It does.
You baby killers. You know, if Israel wanted to wipe out Gaza from the face of the earth, how long would it take it? It could be done overnight. We got the arms, we got the planes. We don't, because that's not who we are. And we try to minimize casualties. So we use our rockets to save civilians while they use their rockets to kill civilians. And they use civilians to protect their rockets while we use rockets to protect civilians.
And
it's maddening. But I appreciate your emotion, Michelle, especially since I see you as a friend and your listenership is friends, but I can't call it a mental illness that takes moral responsibility away from people. When you call somebody mentally ill, they're not responsible. Human beings are responsible, but we're seeing a world split into those people who still have a connection to making moral judgments to those who don't even attempt moral judgments.
I'm going to give you that it does take the responsibility, but I do believe that we have slipped into, through our choices, a mental state of hate that has poisoned our minds like a mental illness. Not like having depression where you are clinically inclined, not like having anxiety where you're clinically inclined, schizophrenia and the like, but a mental disorder by choice, because we have programmed ourselves so efficiently in hate. We have chosen our route so completely that it has poisoned our minds. It has taken over our minds like a mental illness, as I say, a poison. This is, though, if we can call it an illness or a poison, it is one that we can indeed escape by choice. But as you said, Rabbi, I'd like to get to the God story. The God story, which brings it home, that says, you know, an example, I can't tell you the countless wonderful people that I have interviewed who used to be members of the KKK in high-ranking places, who had a change of heart because they saw something in God's word, that God so loved the world. He saw that there is God's love for humanity, that we are all human beings, that we all are the human race, and they see that love of God shed abroad to the world and say, wait a minute. And they changed, and they loved, and they engaged, and they became a different person. We need to be different people, Rabbi.
Indeed, but you've just put yourself in a lot of trouble with the French Supreme Court. Hate to see that happen to you.
Well, you know me. I'm trouble.
A couple of years ago, a Muslim import from North Africa. There are many of such in France. Went over to a neighbor's apartment. A 60-something-year-old woman who was a professor someplace, Sarah Halimi, and proceeded to stab her. Allahu Akbar, and then threw her out of her window, and she died from the impact. The cops caught her, and there was a trial, and they found him to be innocent because he was on marijuana at the time. And because he was on marijuana, he was not responsible for his actions. And it was appealed and went all the way to the French Supreme Court, which upheld the decision. If you're high on marijuana, you can't be prosecuted.
And that's not even scientifically sound. People on marijuana aren't going out there stabbing people and throwing people out the windows. They're sitting on their couch eating Cheetos.
He had a lot of marijuana, and he had expert witnesses saying that.
Okay. Okay.
But that's denying your point. And that's a point that's no longer made in systems that don't have a God that created people in his image and held them responsible for decisions. Because many of the things we do can be traced back to earlier decisions we make in life. And it's easy to say, well, you can't hold me accountable for that because I made that decision 20 years ago. So my life proceeded on the following trajectory, and now I'm no longer responsible. I'm not responsible because I chose to get high enough on marijuana that my ability to determine the difference between right and wrong became a little fuzzy, so I can't be prosecuted. We believe that you are responsible for making choices, and choices that can be foreseen, that are foreseeable, are your responsibility. But you can't get the French Supreme Court to buy that. But I don't think you'd have any problem getting any person who's connected to Scripture to buy that.
No, indeed. That personal responsibility is where it starts. And then coming to the fact that God does have an order, that we have this misshapen idea of what is right and what is wrong. What is that based on? Without God, there really is no absolute right. It's just what I feel, what fancies me for today. But with that moral absolute guideline, that like a compass that has a place to point, that's where we can say this is right, this is wrong. And that's where we can see people who formerly hated being delivered into a place where they can walk in love. So I guess in retrospect, as we conclude our time together, we are in need of an infusion of that kind of life change on an individual basis. And as a people, we need that connection with God to change us from the inside out, to help us to take that responsibility and to bring love and light instead of darkness and hate and disaster.
Beautiful. And if I'm allowed a closing word or two. One is that when we need it not only for ourselves, but we must recognize that we're now part of a minority in the world community. Shifted, we are part of a minority, but we can't throw in the towel and say, oops, we lost. More and more atheists and agnostics around today than there are believers. The Anglican Church of Canada did a report on their viability and said, oops, we probably are not going to be around in 20 years, because they saw they have like no young people. And it's only a question of when the old timers die. And that's happening. It happened to all the mainstream churches. It's happening too. Evangelicals are thriving, but they're losing their young. They are losing their young because combination of ignorance and not being in touch with the Bible. That's a real problem. So those of us who are still connected got to realize that we got to do this not only for ourselves and our families, but now God is giving us a mission for the world. We can't prepare the whole world. That's going to take the Messiah. And we'll disagree on what that's going to look like. But the bottom line is going to be the same. It's going to bring an age of God consciousness to the entire world. In the meantime, our job is to support each other and to reach out to as many people as we can without being pushing in your face religion, just to show them the advantage of a life connected with God. At the same time, we believe in gratitude, and I want to publicly express my gratitude to both the government of Iran and to American mainline churches, because they have done something just so important for Israel in the last couple of weeks. Ever since the state of Israel was declared, there have been people saying, you really don't need it, and go back. You know, they used to want the Jews to go to Palestine, they said to German Jews in the 30s. Now they're saying, get out of Palestine. And why do Jews need a place of their own to live? You're welcome all so many places in the world. Like, where exactly? This past week has done more to make Israel strong and committed to the idea that they have to go it alone if need be, that they cannot depend on those people who they thought were their friends. Joe Biden came up with a nice speech about anti-Semitism, but it took him too many days to make it. Same with Nancy Pelosi. Because they were under pressure from the squad, because they don't want to hurt that part that keeps them in office. That's pretty dangerous for us. So we're not going to count on the U.S. We've welcomed the friendship of millions, tens of millions of Americans, but we are determined now that we're going to do it alone. And Iran, if it weren't for you, we'd be at each other's throats as Jews often are. I understand sometimes that's true of Christians as well. I'm going to speak from Jews. If it weren't for you guys, you have convinced us of what we must do. And if push comes to shove, we have to do things alone and not bow to any other human power. And thank God we're not where we were in 1948 either. We've turned the tide. I wish I could tell you that the majority of Israelis were religious, but it's a growing group. We have a much bigger group in the middle who are not really practicing religious, but not agnostics and atheists either. And that group is growing, and they're becoming more religious. There's more talk about God in Knesset than there ever was before. More people wearing kippot in high positions in government. And it'll happen slowly here, but this is all helping. Understanding that the miracle of what I see every day around me when I walk out of my house in North Jerusalem, it's just miraculous what was accomplished here. And none of this could be accomplished without God. Took a lot of brave human beings. Without God, none of it would have occurred. And anybody who comes here and sees it becomes convinced that this is a land of miracles. The miracle we'd all like to see is that God's peace should reign all around us, that no Palestinian parents should have to go to bed at night thinking that their children are endangered. And that could happen. It can't happen while the imams are still preaching hate, while Abbas tries to outdo Hamas and inspires hatred of all Jews around the world. But the power of God is greater than the power of anything else, and we got to count on it.
We've got to count on it. Final question, Rabbi. Can you let our listeners and viewers know what life is for people like you just going about life in the city. How has all of this affected you all?
So I'm unfortunately, and I feel guilty at this, the wrong person to ask, because I am living in Jerusalem, except for the two rockets that were fired, and we don't know why they were. They are staying clear of Jerusalem because they don't want to target East Jerusalem or have a rocket go errant and hit the mosque on the mountain. That's going to change, by the way, as Iran ships more and more weapons to them, which they're pledged to do. They're not going to be primitive rockets. They're going to be guided missiles. And all of us will be in much greater danger. I can tell you that in almost all other areas of the country, in the north, certainly in the center, and in the south, people spend a good part of their days in bomb shelters. This is the kind of thing that we recall of civilians in London living in the Blitzkrieg, living in the metro because it was somewhat protected. And this is what life has become to many Israelis. It's over, but it's only a break in time. It'll be another couple of years until they start the next round, unless something happens and there's a shift in regime in Iran. And that could happen because most of the people are not behind the mullahs. But if it doesn't happen naturally, Israel will make it happen, because we can't afford to live in a world like this. And frankly, neither can you.
You're quite right. And this is where we may be talking about world events, but these world events have significance to you as you're listening or viewing right now, because you can be part of the problem or you can be part of the change. Being part of the change means finding that God story, seeking deep for it, looking for the truth, and letting it set you free. Go to mymichellelive.com, like us, share us, get the God story out there. And thank you, Rabbi, for joining us. Rabbi Yitzhak Adlerstein, he's a director of Interfaith Affairs for the Simon Wiesenthal Center and a friend to you and me, our beloved Rabbi. It is so very good to have you with us today. God bless you.
Thanks, Michelle. Pleasure as always.
More news and views at mymichellelive.com.